When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store. Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. All right, folks, today we've got Bees in the News, episode 10. And we're going to kick things off with our first article. I had no idea that today was this day, but apparently, particularly in the UK, today is Don't Step on a Bee Day, July 10th, 2024. Don't Step on a Bee Day is observed every year on July 10th in the UK. Bees have been around for centuries and are closely related to wasps. They are mostly found in every part of the world that has insect-pollinated flowering plants. Bees are essential to our survival and play a big role in balancing our ecosystem. They are great pollinators, produce honey, and give us food. This day marks the importance of the existence of these insects and the work they do. So I'm going to link an article that kind of goes into the history of Don't Step on a Bee Day. I kind of feel like every day is Don't Step on a Bee Day, but I think it's one of those awareness kind of things that they just, you know, they have a day to bring awareness to the fact that we need to keep an eye on our bee friends. But like I said, the full history is included in the article, which will be listed on the beekeepingfornewbies.com homepage. Okay, next article comes to us from RFD TV. Contrary to popular belief, there is no crisis with commercial honeybees. Bees are an important part of the ecosystem, but pollinator specialists say there's a lot of confusion around their population. Researchers say when it comes to commercial honeybees, there is no crisis. Quote, I think the crisis and the outcry are probably better directed at the probably more of the solitary and native bees because we can, you know, as agricultural producers, manage honeybees. The native bees that are sort of just in the landscape don't have any choice in terms of being able to move or find new homes, or be able to sort of be fed or managed and rapidly increase populations with sort of a human intervention and management. And so on, they're kind of just stuck with whatever they have in their area, end quote, said Brandon Hopkins. However, Hopkins admits that in general, bees face challenges around the globe. He says commercial honeybees are just better equipped at dealing with those issues. So there's a little bit more of the article, not a whole lot, but you can continue on and check that out if you'd like. You know, but I think a key takeaway with that is, you know, we do tend to get very hyper-focused on bees. A lot of places do exceptionally well with native pollinators. They don't need our honeybees to show up there and solve problems. The reason that there is such a big push, I think, in my mind anyway, about being able to protect them is making sure that the commercial beekeepers working in conjunction with hobbyists are being responsible. Like if a commercial beekeeper owns, let's say, 2,000 colonies and you do a lot of pollination services, you are hyper-focused on the health of your bees. You're constantly treating them with one thing or another, whether it's a preventative, prophylactic type treatment to prevent some kind of a disease or illness, or whether it's the kind of things we would do with Varroa, where we treat based on whatever mite counts are acceptable in our apiary. Just as a couple of examples, if we're not teaching, educating, and helping hobbyist beekeepers understand the importance of those things, we're pretty much doing everybody a disservice, right? We've got to get the hobbyist beekeepers into that commercial mindset, not so much with the number of colonies, but by treating your interest, your hobby, and your involvement with the bees in a professional manner. Treat it as if it is a job or a business that you're running, even if you're just doing it for fun. Okay, a little bit of a sidebar I got off to on there. The next article is titled Buzzkill: Accusations Are Leveled at Research on How Dancing Bees Measure Distance. Scientists allege irregularities in high-profile papers documenting honeybee, quote, odometer, end quote. The waggle dance of the honeybee is one of the marvels of nature. A bee that has returned to the hive from foraging shakes its body in a figure-eight movement that tells hive mates where to find a food source. Discovered decades ago by Australian ethologist Carl von Frisch, who won a Nobel Prize in 1973 for his work, the dance grew more wondrous starting around 2000 with evidence that bees have an internal odometer relying on visual cues to measure the distances they convey in the dance. Now questions are swirling around those claims after two scientists detailed concerns about possible miscalculations, reuse of images, and manipulation of data in 10 of the key papers. If you look at any one of these issues alone, you could chalk it up to human error, says biologist Laura Lubert, a postdoctoral researcher at the California Institute of Technology, Caltech, who co-authored the critique, posted on the AIR-XIV preprint server and a blog post this week. But she says this happened over and over again across many different papers over a long period of time. The accusations have put an uncomfortable spotlight on the one author shared by all of the papers, bioengineer and neuroscientist Mandiam Veerambudi Srini Srinivasan. That's a whole lot there. I'm sure I screwed it up. But anyway, now an emeritus professor at the University of Queensland. Srinivasan, whose bee research won him numerous awards, including the prestigious national honor known as the Order of Australia, says he was unaware of the critical preprint until contacted for comment for this article. Srinivasan told Science his conclusions remain firm and sound and have been replicated independently in many subsequent studies. So the article continues. I think the waggle dance is just one of the coolest things in the world. I've videoed it and I've played it over and over, and I don't know. I think it's really a cool thing. I made a bad joke, I think, somewhere. I shared a video of that and I said, yeah, this is what happens when bees get exposed to pesticides and herbicides. They convulse like this, and somebody kind of got really upset. And I was like, no, I'm just kidding. They're just doing a waggle dance. But anyway, an article definitely worth checking out, especially if you're into that kind of research and a little bit understanding more on the scientific side of it. The article continues for quite a bit. Okay, next. So this is coming to us out of Ontario, Canada, from Sudbury. And if I recall correctly, I'm pretty sure the Sudbury Bulldogs from Letterkenny are in this area here, but I'm really not 100% on this one. Manitoulin Island beekeeper looking for answers after toxic herbicide detected in dead bees. Lab tests reveal higher than normal levels of glyphosate in bee colonies. Janice Mitchell was prepping her bee colonies for what she thought would be another regular winter season on Manitoulin Island. Come February, Mitchell had a nasty surprise when she discovered that 90% of her colonies had died. I'll frequently check my colonies and just listen outside the wraps, and I knew something was up, said Mitchell, a hobby beekeeper and veterinarian. They were awfully quiet. On average, Mitchell says, at the height of her beekeeping, she had 25 colonies. Last year, she only had 18, and about 16 had been decimated. In previous years, the mortality rate for her colonies averaged around 10%. It was my biggest loss. That's when I knew something had changed. Mitchell opened up the dead bees for a necropsy and found no signs of starvation, mold, or moisture problems, no signs of deformed wing virus, and minimal Varroa mites, a parasite of honeybees. So she sent them off for more testing at the University of Guelph's Agriculture and Food Laboratory. Turns out the lab detected 0.57 milligrams of glyphosate, a herbicide used to control troublesome weeds in the dead bees. Research from Europe's Pesticide Action Network says exposure to the herbicide in concentrations between 5 to 10 milligrams, similar to those found in the environment, reduces beneficial gut bacteria in honeybees and dysregulates their immune system. So the article goes on and talks about the different levels and what's acceptable for humans and for bees and other things, and it's a pretty good article, but that scares the crap out of me. I mean, everybody uses some kind of a killer of something, whether it's a weed killer on the sidewalk or dandelion killer, or they're putting something in the grass to make it greener. And there's always something. And I genuinely believe that most people are going into this with absolutely no ill intention. They're just trying to make their life better for whatever it is they're trying to do and accomplish. But imagine that. Imagine, you know, you're a new beekeeper, because most of the people listening, I think, are. You're a new beekeeper. You're in like year three, right? You're really starting to get your stride and you're getting really good at things. You started with two colonies. Like the second year, you went to four or five. Your third year, now you're up to like 10 or 15. And then all of a sudden you come out one, you know, spring morning or whatever, and you've got one colony left out of 10 or 15. You know, I mean, that's just personally very devastating, obviously, for you. But a lot of people really develop a close attachment and love of their bees. I don't think I have quite the level of relationship with them that you might with a pet, but still, they're yours and you care for them. And, you know, a lot of people feel that loss. So I don't know, you know, what do you do, right? What's the answer to that? How do you solve that problem? You can't just tell everybody to move to a rural area and figure it out that way. I mean, there's got to be something. I don't know. All right, moving on here. So this is coming to us from the BBC in the UK. Bees hit by worst disease outbreak in a decade. Bee colonies are suffering from the worst outbreak of a killer disease in a decade. American foul brood has been found in more than 30 colonies in northeast England, according to the National Bee Unit, the NBU. So it's kind of like the SVU, the Special Victims Unit, the National Bee Unit. Okay, that's pretty cool. AFB is caused by bacteria that infect young bee larvae, which then spreads through the hive, leading to the death of the colony. John Canning from the Cleveland Beekeepers Association said, once AFB is discovered, the only solution is to burn the colony. In June, 30 colonies infected with American foul brood were found in a 10-kilometer, 6-mile square area near Gisborough, according to the National Bee Unit, which is part of the government's Animal and Plant Health Agency. Another infected colony was found near Redcar this month. The Gisborough outbreak is the biggest in the UK since 2014, when 33 colonies were found to be infected in Norfolk. Mr. Kang said he believed the Gisborough outbreak had affected two apiaries, which contained multiple hives. So as usual, there's more to the article. I'm not going to read the whole thing for you. I wanted to bring it to your attention, particularly if you are in the UK or know anybody in these areas. You know, I think that from a reporting standpoint, it is actually really important. And I don't even think I've ever mentioned this to all of you, so this is probably as good a time as any. But if you have an illness like this, if you have foul brood, you have something else that is just really unexplainable that happens. Now, you know, if you have one or two colonies and you're a new beekeeper and you're hitting up like your state agricultural office or your local, you know, apiarist or whoever might be in charge of your area, and you're like, hey, my colony didn't make it. And you start talking to them. They're going to be like, yeah, man, you're a first-year rookie. Like they may not have the time for you, or they may, it just depends on how busy they are and what they have going on. But if you do your due diligence and you figure out like, hey, I definitely have this illness or this disease going on inside the hive, inside your colony, follow whatever the recommended procedures are in your area to report that. It's critically important that they are able to maintain those metrics, that they know where they need to spend resources and where they need to be doing more to help the beekeepers in that area. If all of a sudden that was going on, let's say in my neighborhood, you know, I would really like it for them to come down and talk to all the people and the beekeepers who are local and kind of get them up to speed on the best way to handle those things and to treat and to address the issue. So follow whatever the local reporting requirements are for these, because, again, keeping everybody up to speed on what's going on, it helps the whole collective beekeeping industry / hobby. Okay, and it wouldn't be an episode of Bees in the News without getting an update, an ongoing update. They don't get their own dedicated article or slot this week, but the Minot honeybees, we got to give you the updates on the honeybees. So on July 4th, they lost at the Madison Nightmares. They had a 4-14 loss. They lost on Friday, July 5th at La Crosse Steam, a 0-10 loss. That wasn't the best showing for them, but they do have a game at home on July 10th, which is tonight. And don't forget, Thursday, July 11th at 6:05 p.m., they've got a doubleheader. It is Taylor Swift night. Tickets plus what looks like a necklace or something like that are $15. Brought to you by Bremer Bank, B-R-E-M-E-R. So go check out the honeybees in Minot for Taylor Swift night. That sounds really exciting. I think that sounded sarcastic, and it wasn't meant to be. Like I like North Dakota. It's a great place to be in the summertime. Not so great in January, February. And one more for you here. just discovered today by me. I'm sure everybody who's from that area already knows, but I also don't want you to forget about your Salt Lake Bees. They are the AAA affiliate of the Los Angeles Angels. A late rally stings the Bees, drop series opener to the River Cats. So if you want to check out some baseball, some AAA baseball in the Salt Lake area, make sure you stop by. It's going to be at Smith's Ballpark, and they will be at home tonight, the 10th, all the way through Sunday, the 14th, against Sacramento. So go check out those games. Lots of promotions going on with the Salt Lake Bees. All right, folks, well, that wraps it up for this week's Bees in the News, Episode 10. I hope y'all enjoyed it. If you have anything you'd like to showcase on the show, let me know. I think I have an article that was posted that was a good article that someone put in the Discord room that I did not get this time, but I will try to get it next time. Anyway, take care, be kind to one another. Remember, I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Talk to you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.